Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. My name is Peter Mingles. We own this whole thing. We've been doing this radio show with a gentleman. His name is Jim Turner since almost the beginning part of Building Fortunes Radio. I started towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. And for those people that want me to date, meaning like tell you what today's date is, this radio show, it's September 10th of 2021. September 10th of 2021. So a long time ago, Jim Turner and I started this radio show. We try to do it every Friday at noon Eastern time. And if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear previous radio shows that we've done. Jim's an attorney over in Washington, D.C., which gives him a great perspective on a lot of things. He's been an attorney for a long time. He was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, for all those people that might remember Ralph Nader. He's not as visible as he used to be, but I remember Ralph Nader. I had a chance to sit on a plane next to him one time when he spoke about some water purification products that Electrolux had, which is an interesting story. So Jim used to work with him for a really long period of time, wrote a book called The Chemical Feast, and has been really instrumental in helping educate our audience, as well as a whole bunch of other people, about some of the things, the dangers of vaccines, the questions about homeopathy. We've talked about everything from 5G to smartphones to smart meters to a whole bunch of other things. We're going to talk about some things today. But if you go to citizens.org, citizens, CITIZENS.org, you'll be able to hear, you'll be able to see his website. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter. And again, as a friendly reminder, if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear and share all of these previous radio shows. Now, if I sound a little bit different today, it's because I'm on a different phone. My landline that I usually call in had some scratching, popping sounds last week, which identified that there were some problems on the line. There's a guy who still is literally working on the line as we speak, so it takes a little bit of time, I suppose, to fix those landlines or any kind of phone lines as well. So if I sound a little bit different and if I'm interrupted or something might happen, it's because they're still outside trying to figure out what's going on with the landline. It's been over a week, and we can get into that kind of conversation just a little bit later on how we're moving towards the direction of everything going through the internet, which either may not be a good thing. But today is September 10th, which is the day before September 11th, and I thought it would be totally appropriate to talk about 9/11 so we don't forget. We're going to talk about other things as well. But I remember where I was 20 years ago on 9/11, and I'll just share a very short story of something that I did for my children, because remember, this is 20 years ago. So my kids are, I think, 33, 30, and 27. So for many of them, they were young enough to remember kind of, but really not to understand maybe the ramifications. So when my dad was still alive and I'd visit my mom in New York, I took them to Manhattan. I grew up in New York, so this is a special topic for me. I didn't grow up in Manhattan. I grew up on Long Island. But I spent a lot of time driving over bridges, and I'd see the Twin Towers and Empire State Building. And we would go to Manhattan with the kids, take the train, go into the city, go see some cool things. And one of the last times we were there, I took the kids to the Empire State Building. And if you've never been to the New York City Empire State Building, they have an observatory floor, I think it's 102nd, on the outside. And as soon as you take up all of the escalators or all the elevators, and then you get to the 102nd floor and you walk outside, you see how high it is and the magnificence of the city from way above. And then right after we took them And by the way, just watching their faces as they entered a building that big, because they don't have buildings that big in Florida or anywhere else many times in the world. But anyway, so we went there, and then I just wanted to show them perspective. We went to Ground Zero, which was the Twin Towers, and they hadn't started building it out. They were still digging into the basement, and I showed them that the Empire State Building was still something like 10 floors where we were, 10 floors lower or 20 floors lower than the World Trade Center, and that those two big buildings are the ones that fell down. And it was just an amazing thing as far as difference in perspective. But I didn't lose anyone personally there, but I heard a lot of stories, and I was in Florida for a long period of time, so I don't have all those things, but I felt it would be crazy not to remember 9/11 on this day before we get into the next 20 somewhat years. So Jim Turner, that's a little bit about my experiences. I'd like to hear whatever you want to say about 9/11, then we'll move on to today's topic.
Peter, I appreciate being here again. We started this, I think, 2013, and we've been at it for a long time. And one of the main points about being in Washington is that there's a lot of information that flows through Washington. I remember 9/11 very well because Washington was one of the targets. I remember driving down to my office that morning and seeing the plume of smoke from the Pentagon. I didn't even know what it was until about 20 minutes later when we started hearing material on television, which we turned on in our office. What struck me, first of all, it took me 11 hours to go from my office back to my house that day, which ordinarily takes about 20 minutes. The city was completely stopped in every way, shape, or form. And so we went through that process. And, of course, for a long time, couple of hours anyway, there was a fear that other planes were coming into Washington targeting the Capitol or the White House or another plane on the Pentagon. And there were apparently reported another six planes that were flying that did not have positive air traffic control on them. And there was the assumption at the moment was that they were additional planes that were going to be used as weapons. All that was going on. I can remember hearing on the radio about these other planes lying out there. I thought that was kind of eerie and peculiar. It turned out apparently that they weren't. At least I've not heard whatever happened to those planes. But the thing that most stuck in my mind, not exactly from that date, but from time unfolding, is that a little over 2 years later, I was at a think tank meeting, about 25 people with three presenters talking about what we were into at that point, because post 9/11, we went into the so-called war on terror. And we had a very high level Defense Department strategist. We had a former head of the CIA. And we had a very well-placed political campaign manager for political candidates. And the three of them were discussing 9/11 and the implications following it. And I asked them what they thought Osama bin Laden's reaction was to the American invasion of Afghanistan, the American reaction to 9/11. And they said, each one of them in turn said that Osama bin Laden was shocked by the collapse of the Taliban in Afghanistan. It was not something he expected or any of them expected. But the invasion of Iraq was like wrapping a wonderful Christmas present in bows and wonderful little Santa Clauses and so forth, and just handing him something that would make his day and drag us into a protracted inability to have any of our interests resolved in that part of the world. And this was in 2003 that this was said. That's now we're 18 years later, and it looks like everything that these guys were saying in that think tank turned out to be accurate. And I've been following all the writings and so forth over the last two or three days about 9/11. And the one thing that leaped out and struck me was recently one of the articles said that in retrospect, if you look at it, we went into Afghanistan, we collapsed the Taliban, almost caught bin Laden in the mountains there, almost. But if on December 31st of 2001, we had said, we win, we're going home, we would be then roughly where we are now, and we'd have saved $8 trillion and many lives and an entire set of resources just completely wasted, not the most important of which is the human resources, and saved many, many families from all kinds of heartache and difficulty. So that's kind of my snapshot for 9/11 as the 20th anniversary comes along here. But in any case, that's my reaction. What are your reactions to what I said?
Well, the world changed when I was notified by one of my sales reps. His name is Wayne. He called me up and he said, "Did you see what happened?" And he told me that a plane flew into the building, the first one. And I think by the time I turned on the TV, a plane had flown into the second part of the building. And my first reaction was a little bit like yours when you were sitting there on the air, on the ground in your car. What's coming next? Like, there was a very uneasy feeling of what's next. There's got to be something else. And I remember when they basically grounded all the airlines. I mean, there was no airlines in airspace. That was crazy. It's never been done before. But I also said to myself, life will never be the same. They're going to use this as a reason to expand government. And I don't, not a conspiracy thinker, but they're going to use this to expand government. And they're going to use this as a great excuse to take away a lot of our privileges and our rights. Life will never be the same. And that's a pretty accurate statement. So I'm not that smart. You just have to put the dots together and try to figure out how this stuff works. But one of the really horrible parts for me was that, the government could do things like this. I think when I grew up somewhat naive. When I say things like this, I'm talking about the surveillance state, regardless of my opinion, whether 9/11 was a hybrid inside job or not, that doesn't matter. But just the idea that they could do these types of things and be this way for maybe our protection or our control was really something that just struck me, and we see it every day. And unfortunately, it's the if you would think of almost like a speaker knob where you're turning up the volume is turned up so high in relationship to, I can't believe the government would do things like this to its people. And that's a pretty good segue into what I want to talk about relative to the vaccines. But that's what I was thinking about what you said on your comments. Like, what was my initial thought? What's coming next? Really feeling somewhat vulnerable. For me in Florida, feeling safe because we don't have any major cities here. I figured if they're going to hit another one, they're going to hit New York again, Washington again, Chicago. They're not going to hit Palm Coast, Florida, But the reality was is I didn't know what was going to happen next, but I knew what the reaction was going to be really bad. And I say really bad, I'm sure. Like if somebody were able to interrupt and say, "Peter, you don't understand all the ways we saved your life, all the ways we've done different things, all the things we protected you from that you'll just never know about." I said, "You know what? I'll give you that. I agree. There's got to be like heroes and heroic things and unbelievable things that we are still on the planet today because a lot of those things that were done that we'll just never see." So I'm not naive and not ungrateful, but the reality was there was a price to pay for the lack of freedom that we experience today. And like, I'm going to segue into what we're going to talk about with vaccines and mandates and what's happening with the political administration, where we see it going. So it's somewhat symbolic, and I'll let you carry on with your comments after that. Go ahead.
So you want me to talk about vaccine mandates, I guess. That's your question,
yeah,
right?
So I can take that. Let me segue you into that. So my personal opinion is I would have the same conversation with Jim Turner, regardless of who was president, whether it's Donald Trump, Joe Biden, I don't care who it might be, I'd have the same conversation. So this isn't politically charged. The idea that the president of the country is saying to the people of the country, those that are unvaccinated are hurting the country. And those that are unwilling to take an experimental jab, where the science really hasn't been settled and there's a lot of questionable science, the idea that people are losing their jobs, losing their freedoms, hurting themselves, all that other sort of stuff coming from a president of the country makes me feel as if we're in a third world country or a prison camp. So I'll let you comment on that.
Well, I don't know about the third world country and the prison camp, but what I do believe is that President Biden has just announced that he's not a president of the entire country. He's only a president of the vaccinated. And so he's created a division in the country by doing what he's done that is going to make it much, much more difficult to handle the COVID-19 problem. And that is completely secondary to whether people get vaccinated or not. The only way that vaccination as a tool is going to be able to make its contribution is if people voluntarily choose to be vaccinated. And if you, anytime you put into force an authoritarian order, you create a situation where you will not accomplish the thing you're trying to accomplish. And the position of the country at this point is very precarious, much more precarious today than it was the day before yesterday when he hadn't done that. And the reason what I'm saying about that, and I want to be very clear, Citizens for Health's position is everybody has the right to choose their own path to wellness. And if people want to choose to be vaccinated, that's their right, and they have a right to do that, and they should do that. And if they have a right not to be vaccinated, they have a right to choose that. If we're going to set aside this fundamental human right, it has to be done through the process that's been established to do that, which is going through an analysis legally that I've said this on the last three shows, I think, but I'm going to say it again. Does the state have an interest in forcing people to be vaccinated? They have to prove that they have that interest. It's their responsibility. Secondly, what they have an interest in stopping the pandemic, then they have to prove that vaccination is a way of stopping the pandemic, and then they have to prove that it's the least intrusive way of doing that. And then after that, there are opt-outs that are available for every individual that has a religious or a medical exemption. All this that I'm telling you is in the law already. They have a right to be informed about all the risks that they're taking by being vaccinated. That's in the law. It's required. And then when they get done with all of that, they have a right to make a choice as to whether or not they take that vaccine. Unless that is in place, the vaccines will not work well for solving the pandemic problem. And we believe, from Citizens for Health, we have followers of Citizens for Health who choose not to get vaccinated, and we have followers of Citizens for Health who choose to be vaccinated. And I've heard people say why they've chosen to be vaccinated, and some of those arguments are very persuasive to me in terms of their choice. We have members, some of our members are veterans, and some veterans are taking the position that whatever the potential side effects are of the vaccine, it's my duty and responsibility to take the vaccine because that's the way I can contribute to the well-being of the society. And for them to get their information and make that choice, we totally support that. We think that's proper. And if they want to do that, that's fine. On the other hand, there are people who have analyzed the pros and cons and say that the risks outweigh the benefits. That's fine with us as well. Now, the interesting problem we have is that it's quite clear that there is some evidence that what the established order is telling us is proper about the vaccines. It's questionable. And a reasonable person could look at all the data and say, for me, I think the risk of taking the vaccine outweighs the risk of not taking the vaccine. And that is a reasonable position. And as things now stand, that is a position that is supported by the law. And you'll note that President Biden, when he talked yesterday on behalf of the vaccinated against the not vaccinated, his position was he's not going to order people to do it. He's going to create rules that order companies with more than 100 employees to do it. Now, there's a lot of really bad thinking in that way of approaching the problem. First of all, a very large percentage of the people in this country work for companies that have 100 or fewer employees. Last year, we had more new corporations created than any year before that, and then the year before that was the second most. People are moving in droves away from businesses that have more than 100 people. So we're going to have a huge segment of the population that will not be vaccinated or will not be required to be or forced to be vaccinated under the rules that Biden has issued. And incidentally, that's always what happens when government tries to force people to do things. There's always a subgroup that is not going to be reached by the rules. It just is the way it is. So Biden is not making a government mandate, and in addition to that, he's making it only apply to companies with more than 100 people. There's no doubt that you could easily handle a significant portion of this issue by bringing to bear other policies. For example, what about having people in businesses over 100, having the people that want to work from home and not be vaccinated work from home? We've got a big experience now of people working from home, and it's done very well, so well that 4 million people are not going back to their jobs so far that we know of. So all in all, I would say that the action of the president yesterday just flipped the battle over, and now I think the resistance to vaccination is going to go way up. I think there's going to be a lot more people saying, whoa, wait a minute, ordering people to do something is not the way to get it done right. And finally, you know, They said from the beginning, from the established order side, the pro-vax side, that 70% vaccination would give us herd immunity and provide us with protection. Now, there's a lot of argument about whether that's true or not, but just for the moment, internally, their own argument becomes completely suspect if when we are approaching 70% of vaccinated people already, we now have to go out and start forcing the other 30% to get vaccinated. Theoretically, the argument they made at the outset was we get 70% and we're going to be fine. Now they're saying we have to have 100% or we're all going to die or some terrible thing is going to happen. For the president to be on that side of the debate is a huge mistake for the public health and for the president and for the country. If we want to get approached 80 or 90% of the people vaccinated, and we believe that's the right outcome, the best way, and I personally believe the only way to do that, is to persuade people to do it by choice. And if you can't persuade them to do it by choice, go back and look at your argument and ask yourself why well-informed people are saying, I don't want to be vaccinated. The number one group of people that do not want to be vaccinated in the U.S. today is PhDs. And it's, not on behalf of PhDs particularly, but it's very interesting that people who have been trained to look at data, to gather information, to marshal arguments, to present them in a way that is persuasive, people who are at the high end of being trained to use those tools are the ones most likely to say they don't want to have a vaccine. We've got a very serious problem on our hands. We don't even know for sure what COVID-19 is. We know that there's something there that's very dangerous. We may very well have lumped in some things that aren't so dangerous with it and called it all that COVID-19. That's a possibility. But we've got ourselves in a tight spot health-wise. And unfortunately, ever since the Second World War, the American answer to every problem is to call it a war and then try to put force out there to stop it. And that's what they're doing here with COVID-19. And I suspect they'll have about as much luck there as they had with the war on poverty, the war on cancer, the war on drugs. I mean, whenever you conceptualize something as a war, you have a winner and a loser. And unfortunately, the American way of going about war hasn't been all that successful once the Second World War was over. Those are my thoughts.
There we go. So maybe I'm revealing something about the way I grew up, what I'm going to say next, but sometimes my mom would say things or do things to punish us when we were kids. And by the way, I was a bad kid. I mean, me and my brothers fought like crazy. I mean, we were good kids, but we were bad kids working together. My little brother Vincent would tell you about that as well. So, I mean, we used to fight all the time. I think that's part of just the natural process of older brothers and younger brothers, and I had the good fortune of being the older brother. But my mom used to do things like say things like, you know, if you do that, you can't ride your bike to school anymore. I'm like, Mom, what is this? What does one thing have to do with the other? Like, really, seriously. I mean, you punish me because I can't ride my bike, but what the hell does that have to do with me beating up Vincent? You know, where she would do things that would be totally irrational. Like, this makes no sense, Ma. Like, I'd get in trouble, and I'm like, Ma, like, if you want to punish me for whatever. But this makes no sense. This is absolutely crazy. You're a crazy lady, which usually get me in trouble. But what I see the reaction is a little bit like that. So maybe that's why I recognize it or process it that way. Joe Biden, if the goal is to get us healthy and to get rid of this pandemic and to kind of bridge us out of this, everything that is going on, the masks don't work very well, the vaccines don't work with everyone, why are we forcing this, what's the magical number about 100, blah, 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 we could carry on about all those things. I just don't see the logical rationalization of how is this going to help us get healthy, or maybe that's not the goal, you know, then you get all your conspiracy thinker. I have no idea what his goal is or their goal is, but the reality is that you would say, why would you force, and I'll just use one example. I think I sent it to you by in an email, a college football reporter is a gal, and she's going to quit her job because they're forcing her to get vaccinated. And she's married, she has one child, and she's trying to get pregnant with her second child. And based on her doctor's recommendations, she shouldn't get the vaccination because she's trying to get pregnant with the second kid. And she has to make the decision of quitting her job. Think about this. Quitting her job, eliminating her career, maybe her dreams, her aspirations, or whatever, making the choice if she wants to be a mom a second time. And because ESPN, I'm sure, has more than 100 employees, that makes the magic number for her. It's either get vaccinated or lose your job. And I just don't understand how that could be. We're watching nurses and healthcare practitioners quit their jobs, which has got to be weakening the force of people that could potentially be helping to treat people. So I just don't understand this, Jim. It's almost like I'd be saying to Jim, if he was my ma, I would say, Ma, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what you're doing is, it just doesn't not make any sense. So I'd let you comment on whatever I'm just mentioning. There's something else.
Well, I personally, you know, I believe it doesn't make any sense. It's just bad policy, bad science, mm-hmm. bad analysis. And that has nothing to do with whether the vaccine's a good thing or a bad thing. Forget that issue. I don't even want to argue about that. I mean, people can look at it and they can decide, do they want to take the vaccine or not? A democratic society is built on the premise that every individual making informed choices contributes to the overall choice that the community makes. And a fundamental human right, like the right not to have your skin pierced by somebody you don't want to have it pierced by, which is built into the law under, you know, all assault and battery and privacy and almost any other idea of law, is that you are unique and individual, and you cannot have your space invaded unless you consent to have it invaded. And until we recognize that that is a principle that allows us to make the best decisions, we're going to be in trouble. And now Biden has come down on the side of no, choice is not the proper approach. We must use authoritarian force. And by doing that, He has gutted the society's ability to make an intelligent decision about vaccines. And the point is that maybe the people who say you should get vaccinated are right. Maybe they're not right. Maybe the people who say you shouldn't aren't right. Maybe they are right. Or maybe, which I think is most likely the case, it's the right decision for some people but not for others. Now, the public health world's position is, look, if we lose 0.1% of the people because they're killed by the vaccine, that's fine because the other 99.9% is made safer, and that's a good trade-off. It's a bad policy decision because you could have a trade-off in which you got all the benefits of vaccines and none of the side effects if you put your nobody dying from the vaccine as a side effect. If you put your mind to creating the proper policy, you could come up with that policy. But they've just set that aside. They don't even care. Their position is they've made a calculation that if people are dying from the vaccine, it's not very many, not very important, and for society the best thing is a few people die on behalf of all the rest, that's okay. But that's not the democratic principle. The democratic principle is everything has to be done to do the best for every single individual and give everybody the opportunity to be able to make the choices that will make their lives work. And then the collective result of all those individual choices give us the community's result. And there's no scientific reason I can see for overcoming that, but if they want to present it and make the argument that they have to overcome it and that sacrificing a few people on behalf of the others is a sound policy, that's got to go through the courts and be handled. And that's what we're set up to do. That's how we're different from the rest of the world. But Biden has just set all that aside now and said, we've decided, we, myself and Fauci and some of our friends and neighbors and people who run drug companies and so forth have decided that everybody needs to be vaccinated. And so we are now going to put every single draconian tool we have in the society onto making them be vaccinated. And if you're not vaccinated, you're a pariah and you can no longer participate in this society. That is the wrong decision from a democratic point of view. It's just the wrong decision. And again, I underscore that has nothing to do with the argument about whether the vaccine is a good thing or a bad thing. It's bad. If the vaccine's a good thing, this is a bad decision. If the vaccine is a bad thing, this is a bad decision. The point is that the decision about whether this is good or bad is an individual's decision unless, through the proper process, the society makes the choice that they're going to say, we are taking that fundamental right away from you. You can't have a guy who's been hired to run the company make that kind of decision. It's just not within the job description. But I buy what you said at the beginning. I think Trump went down the same path when he did Warp Speed and created the pathway for these companies to get the product in the market. Yes, if you believe the product's a good product and you want it out there, you can justify that. But that does not leave you the opportunity for people to make choices the way they were doing it. And I think if Trump was in there and not Biden, I'm pretty sure that we'd have gone pretty much in the same direction. And I'm going to say right now, I think if a politician emerges who was elected because he doesn't want to have mandated vaccines, he's still going to be under the same pressure that Biden and Trump were, and I wouldn't be surprised if he came up with the same answer. This is something that's right at the core of the society now, and it's got to be sorted out and dealt with. So my feeling is that it's a bad decision whether you are believe that the vaccine is the proper answer or you believe that not vaccine is the proper answer. This idea of dividing the country into two and you're going to have one percentage is vaccinated, one isn't, and I, Mr. Biden and President, are the ones that are vaccinated, not the ones that are not vaccinated. That just isn't going to fly.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised on the stance, the attitude that Biden has, because politically, it doesn't. Like, you know, these politicians do a lot of things for the visual optics and stuff like that. It's not good optics unless he thinks it's good optics. I'm not really sure. I think alienating a whole portion of the population viscerally against you is probably not going to work out in your best interest. But I'm not sure. Like, I don't get it. Like, I think we're in uncharted waters. I think we've never had as many types of issues going on all at the same time. And I don't think we have the – my personal opinion is I don't think we have the leadership to be able to kind of figure this stuff out with all the unanswered questions. But, you know, we're watching it happen as it unfolds. Now,
go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I think Biden just dropped the ball as a leader in this situation. Instead of being president of all the people, he's president of the vaccinated. So – that's it. There's no longer any opportunity to try to consider the interests of the people who don't want to be vaccinated, and whether they're, you know, they've just been brushed aside as if they didn't exist.
Right now, I'm going to come back to our college sports football reporter, the gal who decided that she's going to quit her job and have a second kid. You know, I look at the ripple effect of that as if it was like, well, wait a minute, let's take a look at her and her income. Her and her income, she went from probably being paid halfway decently, as I'm sure a college football reporter, she probably had a significant income with significant benefits. She's got a husband. It was their decision, so maybe financially they're okay. But let's just use argumentatively, she might make $100,000 a year in what she's doing. Well, she's given up $100,000 a year in income. Now, she might have done that anyway to become a mom, but I take a look at the ripple effect of that and just say, you know, look at how this choice that she's been forced to make is affecting her family specifically. I mean, that's got to take it's got to have an impact on the economy. If you kind of magnify that by millions or hundreds of thousands of other examples, it's got to have an impact on a lot of different things. I mean, just so many different things, you could probably draw some conclusions. I don't know where they're thinking as far as what are they trying to reshape in the process of all this stuff. So I'll let you comment on that if you want.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure much thought has gone into this. It's a more visceral reaction. It's more like out of fear. You have a situation where companies, and I'm pretty sure it's almost entirely companies with 100 or more employees. These companies are sitting around saying, we can't find employees. People aren't coming back to work. How are we going to make everything work? There's not enough employees. And so then we make a national policy that says, get rid of all the people who aren't vaccinated. Now how that makes any kind of sense at all is totally beyond me. Why wouldn't you say, how can we create a situation where we can get all the employees that we need, including the ones that don't want to be vaccinated, and put them to work? And quite obviously, we know over the last 12 to 18 months that tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people have gone from companies that are 100 or over employees and gone home and worked from their homes. I mean, I know a bunch of them myself, and in the legal profession, all kinds of lawyers are working from home. Courts are holding hearings from home. All kinds of from home and Zoom and internet stuff are going on. So why wouldn't you create a policy that says we want 100% of all Americans to have the opportunity to contribute what they can contribute to the country? So if you don't want to be vaccinated, then maybe, you know, the companies of over 100 people can set up a way that you can work from home. Right, already they're talking about 4 million people who were employed by these companies who aren't coming back to work. So why would you make a national policy that takes another batch of them and says you can't come to work either? I mean, that's crazy. Now, yes, it's a very tough decision for an individual whose income depends on the job to be told either you're going to lose your income or you're going to get vaccinated. I mean, that's your choice. You're going to either, and in the minds of those individuals, you're going to lose your income or take a risk of losing your life. And that's a choice that the federal government's policy has now presented to a whole bunch of people in this country, maybe a third of the population. This is like crazy. But that's the way they're going to do it. You know, and then they're working really, really hard to get after the kids so that everybody at birth or so is going to get one of these things. And it's all based on a way of thinking that may or may not be correct. But as I say, there are people who evaluate the whole risk benefit to their personal lives who say, I'm going to take the vaccine. I understand their risk. I understand it's a problem, but I'm going to take it. That's the way you want to get people to be involved if they're going to be vaccinated or not vaccinated. National policy to force people to be vaccinated means the vaccination has been reduced to not a very valuable tool in the whole fight.
That's correct. So I know there's probably
There's
probably a young gal who was standing in line behind that gal who resigned, who is aspiring. So ESPN will not have any problem filling that position. So, and it might have been that other person's lucky break, and she might have decided to be either jabbed or not jabbed anyway. To take that position, she might have chosen that. But it's got to ultimately have a festering feeling for a lot of people that won't be ever spoken about. And if you think about it, I mean, are we going to start deciding careers based on who can tell you what you can penetrate in your body? I mean, these are decisions that I didn't have to even think about.
Yeah, well, the point, where I think the ripple effect is likely to show up is we're talking between 25 and 35% of the population so far that's resistant, and a bunch of those people are going to get vaccinated and still be bitter about it and angry about it and unhappy about it, and they're not going to be the best employees that you've ever had. And the ripple effect's going to be that these companies are going to have a very tough time getting their employees. I mean, as I say, they're 4 million short already. I don't see how this is going to add to their ability to get employees. You can say, yeah, there are people standing in line behind each of these jobs, but that's not the same as how come we don't have enough people to fill these jobs? The potential is great there. And the point I'm trying to get at is that presented fairly and honestly, that we are taking risks, and an intelligent, reasonable person might reasonably say, I don't want to take the vaccine. You present it honestly that way, and you'll still get enough people to take the vaccine to provide herd immunity, but it will be in a community that is united, that is solid, that is happy, and that is willing, and you'll get people like the ones I mentioned to you, the veterans from the Citizens for Health world, who have said, look, maybe this is risky, maybe it is going to harm our lives, undermine our health. It's possible. I understand it's possible. But I joined the military knowing that I was taking risks, and I can take the shot knowing that I'm taking a risk. A person that does that, everybody knows the risks, and a bunch of people still say, I'm going to go take the shot anyway, even though I understand it's risky, then they are contributing to the national experience, and they are making a contribution that's valuable. And if it turns out badly for them, they'll have said, I accepted the side effects, and I understand. If it turns out well for them, great. Now, we're pretty sure, I mean, not pretty sure, we're absolutely sure that some small number, we don't know if it's 0.1% or 1% or more of people who are vaccinated are getting the disease, and some of them are dying. These are after they've been fully vaccinated. We know that. Now, maybe it's a very small number that we can identify and say they get a medical exemption because they're at risk. That's possible. But we don't have any incentive to do that now. We've just said we're writing them off. They're gone, dead, over, finished. We did not even have a policy to think about how to create a situation where the maximum number of people who are able to take the vaccine without being harmed can do so by choice, and the people who are potentially vulnerable and believe they're vulnerable don't have to take it. We haven't even made a shot at trying to do that. So we've got a situation in our hands where the national leadership has just dropped the ball as leaders. We now have a national leadership for the vaccinated, and non-vaccinated are outside the bailiwick. They're pariahs, and they will be treated as pariahs everywhere. And at the encouragement of the federal government and the president. So that's where we are.
There we go. Well, we're going to watch how it seems to work its way through. Who knows? We have elections coming up.
I think your point about the optics is pretty good. I think it's going to be tough for Biden and his allies to be successful politically going forward. I just don't see how. They just announced that they don't represent the entire population. So I think there's a real problem there. And, you know, and I'm my transpartisan review process is I come from from Cleveland and Washington, both of which are Democratic cities. I've been in Biden's side of the political fence all my adult life. And I just don't see how. I mean, there are lots of people who are started out being partial to Biden who are now shaking their heads and saying, gee, I don't understand how he got himself in this pickle.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. And, you know, if you were, so from my perspective, if you wondered a long time ago, all right, so Biden's in, How are they going to get him? You know, this is no slam on people that are older, but he obviously looks like he's losing some of his mental facilities. And I would think you'd really have to be on top of your game to be president. I mean, you'd probably have to be really on top of your game. And he physically can't be or isn't, at least from the things that we've seen, unless they throw in a body double in there to show us somebody who's stumbling around. But the reality is that I don't see how this is going to work out well for him. I don't know at one point if he's going to be relieved from office, or this is just perfect for the whole country to feel like this guy's got to go. So we might be all falling into that trap as well. And what might happen with Harris or whoever might be taking over is after that, I have no idea. But it's going to be it's kind of interesting to watch from the sideline, but really sad to watch from the ramifications. So I'll let you wrap it up, because we've been keeping you here for a little bit over 45 minutes already, and I know you usually give us a
My impression is that Biden will serve out his term, most likely not run again. The reason I say that is that we've had crippled presidents a number of times, and they've filled out their terms. It was very tough on Reagan the last 2 years. there was a whole situation, even though Nixon resigned, the Ford period was very, very tough. Ford's the only person that's ever occupied the White House who was never elected to anything on the national level, that he was not vice president or president. He's the only person that's ever done that. That 2 years was a tough 2 years, but he toughed it out and then tried to run again and got, basically lost. The presidency is a funny job. I mean, Roosevelt's last year or two was a little tricky because he was pretty ill. And you look at somebody like Harry Truman, who just said, I'm not going to run again, but he finished his term. Nixon's the only one that didn't finish his term, and that was because his party told him that they weren't going to support him in the impeachment situation. So I still remain optimistic that what we have is a breakout here of the people. The people are saying, we're tired of all this being pushed around by these guys, and I'm quite surprised that sophisticated politicians, even if it's not Biden, but the ones around Biden, don't realize that people are wanting to be more independent and more free, and they've thrown themselves in the breach against that. I just don't see how it's going to work out well for that political class. It's going to be a difficult road to hoe going forward. The first time we're going to know is the midterm elections, and we'll see. We'll know more about the country after the midterm elections than we do now. Because if the Democrats hold on to the Congress, then we know that the country is much more willing to accept these kinds of authoritarian orders than we might have thought beforehand. But if they lose, then we're going to understand that trying to do what he's done is a pretty serious problem. I think that, there's a lot more to say about that politically. Maybe we can go on with that next week. I do want to say one thing about the Citizens website. And we'll say that again next week. We're starting a section on ivermectin in which we're putting all the ivermectin news we can. We've got a professional reporter that's tracking all that news, and we're just putting it in so that everybody can understand the ivermectin debate so that they have something to work with. Because, again, the government has gone way off the deep end in its arguments against ivermectin for COVID. They're talking with enormous certitude about things that they seem to be not very well informed about. And so what we want to do is get as much information out to the public as we can. So Citizens is going to have this ivermectin section with all the pros and cons of the debate so everyone can make their own decision.
Yeah, and that's a huge story, obviously brought to light by Joe Rogan, the podcaster who's now on Spotify, who had COVID, use ivermectin as part of his regimen towards getting healthy. And, he's really messing things up for their narrative that ivermectin doesn't work, because a lot of people really like Joe Rogan. I mean, as far as the population that listens to Joe Rogan, and there's millions of them, they really like Joe Rogan. So he's a little bit like when Jon Stewart went on Stephen Colbert and said, what are you talking about? We called it the Wuhan virus. It was done by that lab. And those are two really defining moments, I think, in the psyche of the American population that are going to really it's really thrown a chink in the armor of the arguments and making a lot of people start to question, why in the world are we not using ivermectin? You know, Joe Rogan did, and Jon Stewart said something over here, and I think a lot of this stuff is really crazy. So when they come so violently against ivermectin, calling it, you know, horse dewormer and horse paste or whatever you're talking about, it's really starting to backfire on the people that are probably not too much into this stuff. But now you're picking on Joe Rogan, and I think it's going to really start to have an impact. So anyway, so back to you on that, and I'll let you wrap it up.
Okay, I was just going to say two things about that. I understand what you're saying about the mass audience response. I also want to point out part of the reason we started our ivermectin page is that there's no logical reason to be taking the positions that are being taken by the FDA and others about ivermectin, and we want people to understand that there's no logical reason for it. What we'd like to see is what the debate is and put all the pieces together. But our own reporter was able to, there was a story that said 70% of the complaints to the Poison Control Center in Mississippi were coming from people about ivermectin. And so our reporter got involved and looked into it. I called the Mississippi Health Department and so forth and came up with the fact that the person said it's less than 2%. And so our reporter says 2%. And she said less than 2%. So that we got out, and actually AP and a number of other news outlets, not the New York Times or the Washington Post, but the other news outlets took away, changed it to less than 2%. They changed the 70% in their stories. And that began a little bit of an avalanche that was able to put behind the popular stories about it works for me, put behind it some of the reporting that says the way these stories are being reported is just not fair. It's just not proper. Now, you know, ivermectin is a totally legal drug. It's been used by millions of people since the mid-1980s. It's a backbone of dealing with parasite diseases all across the third world. It does not cause any harm as nearly as we can tell. For them to be making the arguments that they're making just is not strong. It's not a strong position. Now, there are some strong arguments you might want to make for it, like if you take ivermectin, you're not going to take the things that will really help you. Okay, put that argument out there. But don't go around saying it's a horse pill or a horse paste and yada, yada, when everyone knows full well that it's a human drug that's used by humans all the time all over the world. That's the kind of thing we're trying to get into this debate. And it's, again, I say, you know, if people want to take the vaccine and they're fully informed, no problem. If they don't want to use ivermectin and they're fully informed, that's no problem. Just get the information and have the right to make the choices. That's the place that I think the decisions that the federal government is making are going way off track. And then that's enough for today. We'll get back on this on Friday next week.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So for those people listening in, check it out. Go to citizens.org. Check out that new segment. Citizens.org, check out that new segment, sign up for the newsletters, and if you want to hear this again and share with your friends or anyone else, you can do that if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. Jim, thanks as usual for everything. We'll catch you next time, and we'll see you next Friday.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.